Al Horford, two for two and a steal.
Now, it's time to talk Celtics.
Celtics come roaring out of the gate.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Gasper and Murray. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Game on lock for sure.
Dirk's running into the offensive end. They lead it to Dirk. He turns, gets rid of the three, and it's no good. The reason they call them Hollywood endings is because they're written. This one did not work out for Dirk Nowitzki, but he is all smiles as he leaves the TD Garden parquet floor, likely for the final time. Celtics win it, 114-93. They make 21 threes en route to the win. They're 23rd of the year.
It's getting better. I'm sure it's not where we want it to be right now, but that's okay. We still got a long way to go.
We got some talent. We got some talent in this locker room. I mean, that doesn't mean nothing, of course, because we got to win games and we struggled early, but we got some real good players here. Unwavering faith in my teammates, our coaching staff, our front office. So when we get out there, we get put into a position with opportunity. I play basketball and have fun.
Another win for the Celtics last night at home, 114-93 over the Dallas Mavericks. Sports Hub Celtics Show, 98.5 Sports Hub. Jim Murray, Chris Gasper, and you at 617-779-0985. That's Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown after the game. The shorthanded Celtics, who are still without Kyrie Irving, dealing with that eye injury. No Marcus Morris or Time Lord or Aaron Baines either. Final call of the game, too, was Dirk Nowitzki getting the nice little send-off there.
That was really cool, yeah. Man. I wanted Dirk to make one of those shots there.
Yeah,
I felt bad for him, but it was pretty cool.
0-for-10 from the floor, but it's, boy, when I see him and Vince Carter, it's still cool to see those guys in the league. But on the other hand, man, that makes me feel so old.
Doesn't it?
Oh, my God.
Doesn't it make you feel so old when you see that?
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
Dennis Smith Jr., too. It's like, I remember Dennis Smith playing like it was yesterday. Hell, I worked with him in Atlanta, too. Oh, yeah, that's right. It's his kid. It's just, there's so many things like that in sports. You see it, it just makes me feel like a million years old, which, by the way, I am. Now two straight for the Celtics as they continue their four-game homestand here. You see the depth come into play last night. But I don't know. Like, it's so unsurprising to me overall, Chris, that when you remove pieces from this team, the better that they play. And it's tough not to be, for me, it's tough not to be annoyed by that, because when they're a full operational Voltron, they still seemingly can't get it all get it all together. And I even go back to when we were off, or I'm away, you know, and I watched that Houston game where, at least in the third quarter, Kyrie Irving is going toe-to-toe with James Harden.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal. And then they get their doors blown off in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's seemingly, they can't still figure it out when everybody's healthy.
Yeah, we'll see what it looks like, obviously, when Kyrie comes back, and obviously Marcus Morris back in there as well. But I do see some signs that I think are encouraging, and I'll get to that in a second with Gordon Hayward. But one thing I want to talk about overall with the Celtics is I think we've made too much of their depth. I do. And I think we've made too much of their depth being a positive, because at the end of the day, depth isn't a strength when guys can't accept or produce in depth roles. And that's been their issue all season long, speaking to what you just said.
So guys like Terry Rozier.
Yeah, so it's great to have Terry Rozier, but if Terry Rozier's only good when Kyrie's hurt, then really how deep are you? It's great to have Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and Gordon Hayward, but if they're only going to really produce when somebody else is missing, or they're not going to produce if they have to come off the bench, and lately they have been, which is a good sign, obviously. But that's the thing. I think we made too much of their depth and not enough of how does it all fit together. And can guys be productive in lesser roles? Because the reality is they haven't been. Now, when I look at last night, I think what was encouraging for me, there were a couple of things. Most encouraging play of the night for me happened in the third quarter. Jason Tatum had a mismatch with Dennis Smith. And he was doing the Jason Tatum thing. He was backing him down, out by the three-point line. Then all of a sudden, he realized Al Horford was there. He passed it to Horford, went in the post, posted Dennis Smith, got a great entry pass from Horford, took Dennis Smith down on the post, even though there was a terrible cut by Terry Rozier, who basically tried to bring his defender right to Tatum as he wheeled in the lane to shoot the turnaround jumper. That, to me, that was a super encouraging play, because I think that was kind of what the veterans were getting on Tatum about, which is, yeah, you have a mismatch, and yeah, you can score, but there's a way we can set this up, and it can be a better shot. That really stood out to me. That was really good. And then obviously the play of Gordon Hayward, near triple-double after the 35-point game. I thought that was really encouraging as well. And it wasn't just the numbers he got, Jim. It was the way that he did it, you know. Knocked down three. In the fourth quarter, he had a great cut to the hoop and got a feed from Al Horford. That's what he needs to do, cut to the hoop. And he had a tremendous no-look lob where he had Jaylen Brown in the corner. He looks at him. He ends up throwing a lob up in the air. I can't remember who it was to. It was either Horford or Tice, but a great play. Those are three plays, three areas where Hayward, if he accepts that role and that's what he's going to do, he can really help the Celtics.
Yeah, that was encouraging with Hayward, but I'm taking it with a grain of salt because the last time, he ended up having 30 points against the same team, Minnesota. He completely disappeared. But at least this time, he didn't. You know, it was almost immediate after when they played in Minnesota, he got the 30 points. It was like, poof, he was gone. So I have to take it with a grain of salt, though, because he's been so inconsistent.
Well, I'll tell you this, too. So I mentioned, you know, three positives, three negatives for him in that game. Did you see him try and, in the fourth quarter of that game, try and do the up and under reverse layup? No lift. Got rejected by the rim. And he had two other shots right at the rim that he missed. I believe one of them he got fouled on. So he's still not converting at the rim the way he did before the injury. It's an issue. He's not the finisher that he has been throughout the course of his career. And honestly, that reverse layup, and I'm not ragging on him. I'm not making fun of him. It's difficult to come back from this injury, but that reverse layup was painful to watch. I mean, there was just no elevation, no lift. He like went up and hit the ground before he got to the other side of the rim and got rejected by it. So there are parts of his game that are missing. And I think he has to accept that at this point and take advantage of the Celtics offense because they can generate scoring opportunities for him in transition. If he cuts, because the team has other great passers, those threes are going to be there for him and he needs to knock them down. That's what this team needs. So that helps this team and it helps him until he gets physically back to where he was. And I don't know if that will be this year, to be honest.
What else? As you mentioned yesterday, that you think the teams have tape on him in terms of how to attack him.
Yeah, they do. I mean, I think there was another one in that game last night where Devin Harris took him to the rim and took him to the rim, you know, pretty good. And you're seeing this. Tony Snell, Eric Gordon, guys are taking him to the rack because he doesn't have the lateral quickness and lift to defend. And actually, I think that this might be getting better. And the reason I think this is that Marcus Smart had a quote on this last night, you know, talking about this. This is from Jay King's Twitter account. He tweeted this out, Jay King of The Athletic. Smart on Hayward. Early on in the season, guys were trying to pick on him and kind of exploit that matchup. I wouldn't say early on in the season. I'd say pretty much up through last night's game against the Dallas Mavericks. But now he's more comfortable with his legs where he can hold his own and really get out there and defend and then come in on offense and make plays. So that's Smart basically telling you, like, they've noticed. You see it. When teams get a switch on Hayward, guys that you wouldn't think are going to drive to the hole, like Tony freaking Snell, who just wants to shoot jump shots, they're like, oh, I have Gordon Hayward on me. The book on Hayward at this point, coming back off the injury, is that you can take him to the rack one-on-one. You can break him down if you get him in a one-on-one situation. ISO, take to the rim. I think he's getting better in that, but he's still a little bit of a defensive liability. Like, as great as that Minnesota game was, do you know that he was a -7? He had the worst plus-minus on the Celtics in that game, even with the 35 points.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So he's still a little bit of a man-defense liability at this point. Smart's basically saying this, but he's saying it's getting better. And I think it is getting a little better. I think it will be better by the end of the year.
So they're, you know, they're at the fifth seed in the Eastern Conference as of right now. As of, I think it's next Thursday's game against Miami, we'll officially be at the halfway point of the season.
Oh, my God.
I know, it's crazy how it's flying by. Do you still give them a legitimate chance to still even end up maybe at the two, or is it the Bucks and the Raptors in the East, and then, you know, hopefully they can even get as high as three?
I think they can definitely get up to three. I know that you look at the way that the Pacers are playing. They're playing really well. They won six in a row. Victor Oladipo hit a complete BS bank shot three-pointer in overtime to beat the Bulls. That's just the way it's going right now for the Pacers. I definitely think the Celtics can get up there. I think they'll finish ahead of the Sixers, who right now are fourth. You know, you're four games back of Toronto, and you're 4.5 behind the Bucks. Can you make that up? Yeah, you can, but I don't think it's going to be they'd have to rip off basically the type of win streak they ripped off last year after Hayward went down. Like, you need to have some sort of 15, 16, 17 game win streak, I think, to pass those teams and get the number one seed.
Sean Silver, you're a green teamer. What do you make of this? There's no Kyrie Irving again, and all of a sudden this team resembles last year's team. There's good ball movement. There seems to be chemistry. What do you make of all this?
Yeah, what I see, even though Kyrie Irving is out, I see a team that is cognizant of the reasons why it's important to figure things out right now. I think you saw that manifest in a couple of different ways last night. One, you saw the Celtics out-rebound a team that had DeAndre Jordan on the floor. And particularly got after the offensive rebounds, which is something that's been lacking kind of game to game for them. Even Gordon Hayward pulled down a couple of key offensive rebounds last night. Also, you saw it in the defense. And, you know, I think we've kind of been saying as the season goes along, and I know you said it, Jim, you know, like the NBA doesn't really start up till Christmas. And even then, the regular season is the regular season. You're not going to see full throttle on a lot of nights. But you did see a lot of hands in the passing lanes last night defensively. I think their defensive effort, save for that Dallas run in the second quarter into the third, where they either tied it up or, you know, were right there with them. For the most part, last night, the defensive effort was really high. So I think you see guys really kind of valuing their opportunities to, you know, step forward and show what they can do, but also, like, make it work with the other guys on the floor. Now, you throw Kyrie Irving back into that mix, and, of course, that changes things. A lot has been said in recent days about, you know, how the offense functions with Kyrie Irving on the floor particularly. And even the ESPN guys the other night, you have Paul Pierce, Chauncey Billups, who's the third guy, Jalen Rose. I wanted to say Jalen Brown, but he's another guy. Jalen Brown has been playing much better. But they were kind of like, oh, well, you know, the Celtics need to make a decision. You know, is Kyrie Irving your guy, or, you know, are you going to go with, like, last year's, you know, little engine that could kind of deal? It's like, well, of course Kyrie Irving's your guy. I mean, when you get to the playoffs, you need an elite talent on the floor. It's as simple as that. This is the NBA. These are hard and fast rules. But I do like the fact that the secondary guys are getting a little bit of chance to style and are showing that they're actually making the most of it. Like Jason Tatum, you know, taking better shots. That is something that we just need to see. We need reps of that as the season goes along.
I just, look, without question, like, if your eyes work, you know, Kyrie Irving is the most talented player on the team, but it just feels like there's an elephant in the room here that when he's away, the team looks like last year's.
It's weird.
It's more cohesive. It's, they play better. Brown's out of his slump. Hayward's out of his slump. So, I don't know. Is it too much ISO ball with Kyrie? Do these guys, is it just a chemistry thing? Because I think if I'm one of these young guys, if I'm like Jaylen Brown, and I too carry myself as a very cerebral player, like Kyrie does, I don't know. Like, there'd be part of me. I just think it's human nature to look at him and be like, dude, shut up. Like, at these closed door meetings, there would be part of me that would think, it would be tough not to. It's just human nature to think, like, dude, we got to Game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals without you last year. Please tell me again how I need to work on my game and improve because of these young players. I'm just trying to bring us along. Please tell us, Kyrie. Oh, and by the way, where were you for Game 7 last year? Oh, that's right. You were going to get a nose job so you could go on your press junket for your stupid movie. I just think that there would be...
So you think he's patronizing? You think it's patronizing?
Yeah, a little bit. And this is where Brad Stevens comes in, too, because it feels like he doesn't have that much control of the room. And it's just like, oh, I'll just let the players police themselves. I just think it's a chemistry thing more than anything else. They have the talent to do it and to be a better team.
Yeah, they do. I think that part of it is something we've talked about a lot, though, that, look, it's Kyrie's out, and it's great that they're performing the way they are, and these guys are getting more opportunities and more shots, but there can't be a connection between your offensive performance and your defensive performance. So when Kyrie comes back and you don't get as many shots, if you're Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum, your defensive performance can't dip. And I think that's one of the issues with the Celtics and being a younger team is that there's too many guys who really can only affect the game if their offense is going. And when their offense is going, they don't bring anything else. And I think that's one of the reasons they switched up the starting lineup. And Kyrie likes playing with Marcus Smart, and he liked playing with Marcus Morris. Now, Marcus Morris has been great offensively, but I think, like, his shots come within the construct of the offense, the flow of the offense. And so it makes it a little easier. He's a knockdown shooter. I think Kyrie's had a great year. I think at the beginning of the year, honestly, he was being too unselfish, like trying too hard to get out of the way, and he just wasn't being Kyrie. And then he just went back to being Kyrie, and that was great. I'm not going to use Kyrie Irving as an excuse for some of these other guys not being able to accept the roles they need to accept and produce in those roles for this team to be the team that it needs to be. I don't think that he's the greatest, you know, leader in the world. I think he's trying to figure that out. But on the court, do I think he's been like this hungo who has prevented these other guys from flourishing? No. I mean, if anything, what prevented them in the beginning of the year from flourishing, in my mind, a lot of the, if you're Tatum or Brown, was the unnecessary minutes and role for Gordon Hayward when he clearly wasn't Gordon Hayward. And I think that now Brad started to adjust and realize, okay, this is the Gordon Hayward that I'm working with.
Yeah, I just, these guys need to take some personal responsibility too and check themselves. But I do wonder, just human nature being what it is, like, if some of them look at that as like, oh God, enough, dude. Like, we get it. You know, there's closed-door meetings that happened since the loss against Milwaukee. It had, apparently another one happened after the loss to Houston last week.
Oh, really?
I think it's more of a chemistry thing than anything
else. Well, here's the one thing I'll say quickly on that, because I know you want to go to the calls. But I think if you're Kyrie, you have to be cognizant of this. When you played with LeBron, you didn't enjoy LeBron basically, you know, sunning you. Like, hey, son.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and so
let me show you the way.
Yeah, let me tell you how it's done, son. Like, so don't do the same thing to Tatum and Brown. You didn't like that when he did that to you. You wanted to feel like you were an equal partner in the thing. So don't, you and the other veteran players, don't turn around and sun, you know, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown.
All right, your thoughts. You want to talk about last night's Celtics win over the Mavs, 114-93. Let's hear from you, 617-779-0985. Danny Ainge was on with Touch and Rich earlier this week. Doesn't sound like there's going to be any moves coming for this team between now and the trade deadline, at least with the way he was talking about it with those guys. We'll play that audio and get some thoughts from Chris Forsberg, who covers the Celtics for NBC Sports Boston. We'll talk to him next here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's an hour dedicated to your Celtics. Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, The Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Well, we're always looking to upgrade our team. I mean, if those opportunities present themselves, I think that's going to be tough. I will say that, you know, just as far as trading players, you know, I don't really see much out there that we have a lot of good ones, and it's hard to get better players than we have.
Sports Hub Celtics Show, 98.5 The Sports Hub, Jim Murray and Chris Gasper, and you at 617-779-0985. That is Celtics President of Basketball Ops, Danny Ainge, making his usual weekly appearance on Toucher and Rich just a few days back here on the Sports Hub. And sounds like a move might not be coming from that little sound clip there. At least that's what it sounds like to me. We bring in Chris Forsberg, who covers the Celtics for NBC Sports Boston. Hi and happy new year there, Forsberg. Hi.
What's up, boys? What's going on?
Not too much. So when you hear that, I don't know, does it sound like how it does to you, to me, to you? Like that, I don't know, Danny Ainge might not be quick to pull the trigger on trying to make any move, and they're just going to try to figure things out with this roster.
Yeah, with like the usual caveat that you can't take Danny Ainge at what he says all the time, and no GM is going to tell you, yeah, I'm going to come out and trade half my roster.
Well,
but
sure.
I do sort of agree that a move has been unlikely. You know, going into the year, I did think they would move someone off this bench, and I'll be honest, I've probably told you guys before, I thought it was going to be Marcus Morris, because of his free agent status. I thought it would be tough for him to find a role on this team in terms of would there be enough shots for him, but as we've seen, he's like this probably the second most important player at this point, and or at least the second most consistent behind Kyrie, putting himself in the all-star conversation. So I don't know if they're just an obvious choice to move. I don't think you get better by selling low on a Jaylen Brown type or moving Terry Rozier when his value isn't as high as it could potentially be, even if you wait to the summer. And so I just think this team is probably going to have to ride it out with what they have. I wouldn't be surprised if they picked up someone on the buyout heap after the trade deadline and maybe try to fill out a roster spot that way and fill a need, whether that's a big or a shooter or whatever you know you need at that point. But I do think a trade route is highly unlikely, and especially because you want to preserve all your assets to the summer when, you know, maybe a certain unibrow center is on the market.
I like that, a certain unibrow center. I mean, that definitely makes sense. I want to ask you, what do you see from Gordon Hayward here? And I know we've all been looking for it. We thought the first game against Minnesota, Chris, with the 30 points, he turned the corner. But is there a possibility he's turned the corner now?
Yeah, I think even before, like going back to that San Antonio game, when he put up an offer, I still like the shots. I still like that he was creating for teammates. I think he's been probably better than maybe the box score reflects lately. Now, that all that being said, I was really curious how he would respond last night, because just like you say, Gasper, like coming off that other Minnesota game, he just kind of went back to not giving you much. And so this is the first time he's strung consecutive games together that he's been really impactful. At least in terms of the box score. And that's an encouraging step. Like, I still don't think you should expect him to be super consistent. I still think there's going to be nights where that ankle bothers him and his shot defies him. But if he can be the player we saw last night where, you know, sneaky, trying to get to that triple-double and gives you a little bit of everything, and especially if he can help you on the defensive end, that's a really good sign for this team. I think the one thing that I keep going back to is when I think about, like, if the Celtics are going to be really good, if they're going to be the sort of contender we think they should be, like, Gordon Hayward has to be very good, and he has to go to another level. So the fact that he's starting to make strides is encouraging, because let's face it, you know, coming in and right through Christmas, we're sitting there going, all right, is he going to figure this thing out? How much time is he going to need? So we still need to see a little bit of that consistency, but good. I'm more encouraged by what I've seen the last two games than I have been at any other point this year.
And just quickly, it was interesting because, you know, look, with the injuries here, Brad has kept him coming off the bench. Is that his role for the rest of the year?
No, I think eventually they shuffle this thing up. I wouldn't be surprised if Marcus Smart and Marcus Morris eventually go back to the bench. I think it's harder with Marcus Morris right now just because he's playing so well. But we'll see how he comes back from this injury. But I do think eventually they'll get back to the lineup that started the season or some variation thereof. Maybe Marcus Smart or Marcus Morris muscles their way into it. But it would be helpful to have a Hayward or a Jaylen Brown or one of these guys coming off the bench that gives you a little something in terms of offense because, let's face it, the team, the biggest concern to me has always been when Kyrie's not out on the floor, they really struggle to score offensively. And so if you can get a little bit of a burst, whether that's creating or scoring for Gordon or just Terry Rozier becoming more consistent off that bench, you need to be able to at least just tread water. But, you know, more importantly, you need to be able to beat other benches. If you've got this depth, they've got to take advantage. So, I wouldn't be surprised if Gordon rides it out on the bench for a while, but I do think eventually they find a way to sneak him back in and, but they will still come up with a stagger, like how to keep him and Kyrie, one of those guys on the court for most of the game.
Talking to Chris Forsberg, who covers the Celtics for NBC Sports Boston here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub. So I continue to be fascinated by this, Chris, and give me your thoughts on it. Like, so Kyrie's out here with this scratched eye that he's been dealing with a couple of games, and when he's out, you see better ball movement. Hayward looks like an improved player. Tatum's posting up and attacks the paints. The defense is better. So can we address the elephant in the room here? Like, why does the team look like last year's Celtics when Kyrie is out?
So I think this typically happens when you're missing a key component of your team. For the initial short term, your team, I don't know if they just feel this need to step up or play above their heads, but you typically see a star goes down and the team plays well. What I think you see in the long term is it's unsustainable. And so, like, if Kyrie were to miss 10 games, I'd be concerned. But what this team is showing is it's finally showing a little bit of its depth. And it's able to lean on that and get through the stretch. The one curious part is, like, the assist numbers have been great. And so, you know, there's certainly something to the idea of, all right, well, you know, when Kyrie's not out there, are the guys more just, let's move this ball, let's find the best shot and take it, whereas when Kyrie's out there, I do think there's some of this, hey, let's just stand over here and watch Kyrie do what he does. That to me isn't necessarily on, you know, Kyrie as the fault of why the ball wouldn't necessarily stick with him in those situations. I do think he tries almost too hard at times to get everybody else involved. But certainly I think Brad needs to reaffirm to everybody as they reintegrate Kyrie, like, hey, look, you know, this works. Don't be afraid to move it. Look for the best shot. I just think it's, before anyone starts up the whole, like, trade Kyrie and get Terry Rozier in the starting lineup again, like, it's nice in the first couple games, but I think if you did it out over the stretch of a longer sample size, you might see those numbers start to come back to earth a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I think also you have to look at, like, level of competition, too. I mean, Dallas has had some nice wins this year, but a lot of people thought that they were going to be, you know, like a high lottery team in terms of, like, finishing with the third, fourth worst record in the league, and Minnesota is a little bit of a train wreck. So, you know, I could see if they were going out against Toronto or Milwaukee and winning these games, having this discussion, but let's look at the level of competition, too. Like, that's part of it. You mentioned Terry Rozier, and I guess, you know, I'll just ask the obvious sports talk radio question. What's wrong? What's wrong with him? Because even last night, like, again, the shooting percentage, you know, entering last night's game, his shooting percentage from the floor was 38.7, which was the same as Marcus Smart. And he's in an interesting situation where he feels like he should be able to cash in on an opportunity to start in this league. And for me, Chris, he's sort of the poster child for why the Celtics' depth, to me, has been overrated, because it doesn't matter if the guy can't produce in the role that he has on the team. And to me, that's Terry Rozier.
Yeah, and I don't know what the easy solution is. Like, Brad Stevens can sit these guys down all he wants and say, hey, listen, I want you to go out there. I don't want you to press and feel like you need to be the player we saw in the playoffs. You know, what these guys need to do is just be okay with, look at the per 36 numbers. Look at the points per possession numbers. Like, don't get overly caught up in how your stat line looks. It's more to me about, are you helping the team when you're on the floor? And when Rozier's been in that reserve role, he hasn't helped them. Like, I think he's the only guy on the team with a negative net rating. That might have changed the last couple of games, just because. But that's the factor of him being in the starter role.
Yeah.
I don't know. like how you convince these guys, but it's ultimately on the player to me to step up and just embrace that. And I know that's so hard because they're all sitting there and it's only natural. You're thinking about your own contract, your own future, your own stardom. But like they really just need guys to buy in. And not that I don't think Terry Rozier is 100% committed to like wanting to win and to be good in a reserve role. I just think there's such a different mindset for him. He comes off the bench and he's thinking, I got to score. And so, first trip down the floor, he got an open look from the wing with 17 on the shot clock, and up goes the ball. And I'm thinking, that's not the best shot for the Celtics. That's not the way they generate offense. And I think, whether, as you said, his shooting percentages, haven't been great overall. He's been pretty decent from three, but, I don't know. Like, it's just on the player to accept the role and understand that if this team wins, if this team is successful, that's going to be so much better for his value than necessarily anything he can do individually. We see this every year, championship teams, whether it's the coaching from that staff or the players, they're more in demand because they were part of a champion and people want a part of that. I think Marcus Morris is sort of the poster child the other way. Like, he's not taking as many shots. He's finding his role in a different way this year, and he's thriving and almost to an all-star level. So they just got to get guys to buy into that, and I don't know. That's just not an easy thing, and certainly through the first 41 games, it's something that hasn't played out.
And just as a follow-up to that, you mentioned Terry Rozier and his value. Has this season to this point, has this hurt his value at all if the Celtics try and move him moving forward, try and use him as sort of a sign-in trade or some sort of piece there? I mean, can you make a case that they should have sold high on him after the playoffs?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, I go back to it. I think both Jalen and Rozier were their values were about as high as they'll ever get coming off of that playoff run. Now, I completely understand why, Danny Ainge would have been reluctant to move him at that point. You're thinking, all right, we want all these guys back. Yeah, Gordon and Kyrie, this should be a championship-caliber team. Let's see how it works. But certainly their struggles have diminished their value, and I don't know necessarily that you could get to this summer and have the same sort of ability to cash in. I keep saying it, and I don't know if it's fair, but Kawhi was available. There was huge question marks about him, but I do wonder if the Celtics had taken a lot of these assets that have diminished value since, and Jalen and Rozier and the Kings pick, would they have been able to muscle their way into that conversation? But that's hindsight. Like, it's easy to say it now because Kawhi looks so good and Jalen and Terry look so bad. But certainly it adds a layer to how you build this thing moving forward. Now, if their pursuit of Anthony Davis or whoever else, if another star were to become available, I don't think it hinders them that much. They're going to be more hamstrung by like Terry being a restricted free agent. It's going to come down to like what's his market, and sign and trades become more difficult when you're over the luxury tax. There's all these like little hurdles they'll have to deal with. That being said, I still think they could be key pieces in moves. It's just probably not as easy to make them sort of the focal points as it might have been over the summer.
Chris Forsberg, who covers the Celtics for NBC Sports Boston. Just one thing real quick before we let you go, Chris. A nice moment, obviously, last night when Dirk Nowitzki gets a standing ovation when he comes into the game. But how old does that make you feel? Because we were talking about it earlier. And feel like a million when I still see him play.
I feel old because Jose Juan Barea is also like 30-something years old, and being a Northeastern guy, that was always like, I don't know how I feel seeing him coming towards the end of his own home playing day. I do love that, like, that's, not to get all sappy, but like, that's what makes Boston really cool, right? Like, that we have those sort of moments, and credit to the Dallas for trotting him out there for as many minutes as they did, because Rick Carlisle pretty much cost his team a win trying to get Nowitzki a bucket. You forget that game got pretty close, and then every time they put Dirk in there, the Celtics would make a run. But seeing him come, like, it's a reminder that we're all human and that everybody's time comes, and it's a little bit sad, and I don't want it that way. I want all of our stars to play until they're like 50 and never show any deterioration.
Well, I'll say this. The one thing I really like about it is because it's real genuine, right? Like, he's not asking for any kind of like farewell dance here, unlike, Derek Jeter or even David Ortiz.
Wait.
So, Chris Forbes.
It's just really cool to see. Like you said, you could sit there and you want to get like all the adoration and stuff like that. But like for him, it's just like he just wants to be a player for one more season and enjoy all that. That's pretty cool.
Chris Forsberg, check him out on NBC Sports Boston. Find him on Twitter as well. Always a pleasure, my friend.
Hey, thanks, guys. Take care.
All right, Chris Forsberg joining us here on the and I forgot the sponsor. Look at your email now. The AT&T, it's not the AT&T Expert Hotline. The Expert Hotline is sponsored now. Let me look it up by email so I don't get yelled at by the bosses.
Yeah, you can do that.
I'll get it on the other side. How about that?
Yeah.
The Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Thank you very much, Tucker Silva, behind the glass. The Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. That's where Chris Forsberg just joined us there. See, it's a new year. I'm still trying to shake off all the cobwebs from being off for almost 2 weeks. All right. You want to talk Celtics? Let's hear from you. 617-779-0985. There was something else that Danny Ainge said when he joined Tucker and Rich earlier this week. Had nothing to do with trades. He compared LeBron James to the president, and then people lost their minds. I want to touch on this next Sports Hub Celtics show here on 98.5 of Sports Hub.
Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I was super, super ecstatic to win one for Cleveland because of the 52-year drought. Like, I was ecstatic. Like, obviously, I showed that the first wave of emotion was when y'all, everyone saw me crying. Like, that was all for 52 years of everything in sports going on in Cleveland. And then after I stopped, I was like, that one right there made you the greatest player of all time.
You know, why are you saying that? I don't know. You know, maybe he thinks that sells. Maybe he's taking the Donald Trump approach and trying to sell himself. I don't know. But, you know, time will tell. I think history, I don't even know if anybody knows who the greatest of all time is because the years are so different.
What's up, Celtics Show, 98.5, the Sports Hub. So that's LeBron James earlier this week on, what was it, his More Than an Athlete show, where he came out and said he believes he's the greatest basketball player of all time after he was able to have a comeback against the Golden State Warriors a few years back. Kyrie helped too, by the way, LeBron, but he's the greatest basketball player of all time, but fine.
Kyrie only hit the game-winning shot. I mean, the block was great.
Yeah. So Danny Ainge, Celtics president of basketball ops, on his usual appearance on Tucker and Rich on Thursday, you know, said what he said. Said maybe he's taking the Donald Trump approach and trying to sell himself. I don't know. Since then, if you haven't been paying attention, this became a national story. And Chris, I wish I could tell you that I'm surprised that this became a national story, but I am not, because we're living in the dumbest time in human history. So it became a national story in terms of a talking point. I get it. Okay. It's it's something to discuss. Like, is he the greatest of all time? How does he compare to Trump in terms of self-promotion, that kind of thing? Okay. You want to talk about it that way. He apparently works at the Globe. Who's Owen Pence? Is he just an intern? You look confused. So you obviously don't even know what that
no,
is.
No, I do
he
know.
He apparently works at the Globe.
No, he does. I'm just trying to figure out, what his role is now. I don't know if he's full-time with us or not, but I do know Owen. Very nice young man.
Okay, well, he's also an idiot because he tweeted that this was veiled racism from Danny Ainge. This was veiled racism from Danny Ainge when he's trying to talk about this. He's reading some of his tweets here. LeBron has experienced this. Ainge has always been an incredibly shrewd wheeler and dealer, but this is some serious stupidity fueled by white insecurities. Disappointing. Now, some of the fine folks that work here at the Sports Hub, like Ty Anderson, who I'm huge from, went back and forth with this dope on Twitter. This has nothing to do with race, people, and I don't want to mirror what Fred brilliantly was ranting about on this very thing yesterday on Tucker and Rich, but I'm with him 100%. I just had to be brought up because I can't believe how stupid everybody is now. While I'm no fan of the president, and I mostly think he's a moron, he's obviously great at self-promotion and trying to convince people he's the best at everything. Yeah. Just like LeBron James, that's what he meant. That's what he meant, but boy, you bring
I think that's all fair. Yeah.
That's all. Yeah, that's all it was. But that someone could take this and try to twist it into some sort of veiled racism. Like, dude, like, what are you doing? Like, everyone's lost their minds when you bring up the president's name. I get it. Again, I'm no fan of him. You want to email me, tweet at me, fine. I can understand it because people lose their minds when you bring up that name. That's not what it was about. The man is, again, shrewd businessman, very good at self-promotion, just like LeBron James. That's what Danny Ainge meant. Social media, really, it's for all the good that it gives us, it's mostly bad, and this is proof yet again. Like, I wish I could tell you I can't believe, but I truly believe that this ended up happening because we've all lost our minds. Social media is melting people's brains, just like this Owen Pence that you work with. And I'm sure he's a very nice person. But for him to tweet this, like, dude, what are you doing?
I didn't even know what he said. Here's what I'd say on that. So I agree with everything you said in terms of the comparison. And yes, you know, Donald Trump is excellent at leveraging his brand. And I think LeBron James, I think both of these individuals are people who, you know, are very confident in their abilities and very proud of what they've accomplished. and sometimes can exaggerate. However, here's where I'll say I think Danny Ainge made a mistake. Given LeBron James's feelings about Donald Trump and some of the issues that LeBron James and other African-American athletes in the NBA have had with Donald Trump, including, you know, Steph Curry and obviously LeBron James stumping for Hillary Clinton, I don't think it was the greatest comparison to draw. I don't think it's racist, but I can see where if I'm LeBron James, I would take offense to that. Basically saying you're putting me in the same category with someone, again, speaking as LeBron James, that, and LeBron James, to his credit, I think hasn't done the Michael Jordan thing, and whether you agree with him or not, has been very vocal about how he feels about the president and the president's policies and the president's stances when it comes to social justice and racial inequality. So I think comparing LeBron James to Donald Trump, although Danny Ainge didn't intend it and didn't mean it, and I don't think it's racist at all, I do think it's a slap in the face to LeBron James. I think you got to come up with another name in that circumstance. Like, I think it's a poor comparison considering the circumstances. I think that's where it's legitimate.
But so he's okay. The comparison's like he's a carnival barker, which I think that they both are in a lot of ways. So
but let me take someone like, I'm not going to name names, but if I compared you to a certain chef in the city, that you, I'd be like, hey, you know, you're just like that. Wouldn't you be offended?
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, there's people I hate.
There's people. So if I compared you to someone that you hate and think is morally bankrupt, and even if my comparison in some small aspect of your life is legitimate, would you not take offense to that?
Sure. Yeah. No. And okay. So it was. Okay, Danny Ainge, I understand where you're coming from. Danny Ainge could have been a little bit more delicate in who he used because obviously LeBron James is no fan of the president.
Yes.
Right. So,
for very particular reasons.
But I just think he was, you know, I don't think that there was much behind it.
No, there was no malice behind it, but that doesn't mean he didn't misspeak.
Yeah.
In other words, this is what I'm saying. Like, and you're right. I agree with you, but here's what I would say. I think we also get in this social media age. Like, you know, two things can be true. Was that racist by Danny Ainge? No, absolutely not. But did he potentially misspeak? Yeah, I think that's possible. Like, I don't think that's the greatest comparison for LeBron James. I just don't. I mean, I think, again, given sort of the background of what LeBron's trying to accomplish from a social justice standpoint and what he said about the president, I think comparing him to the president, I could see where LeBron would find that offensive or where it would be offensive. Not a great compare. You could come up with somebody else, like come up with some new entertainer or whatever. You know, say that you're going to compare, you know, oh, LeBron, the greatest, you know, whatever. You know, he thinks he's like, I don't know, Pete Davidson. I don't know. I don't know what the comparison would be, but I don't think that evoking the president when you're talking about LeBron James and everything that's happened sort of between the president and LeBron James was the greatest thing to do.
It's just further proof everyone's lost their minds. Everyone's lost their minds. John in Boxford on this story. Go ahead.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. Go ahead.
First of all, I think, you know, I love listening to you guys. You guys are awesome. But here's the deal. I don't think, I mean, I know a lot of people don't want to hear people talking about politics from when they want to listen to sports. So whether you like Donald Trump or not, I don't really want to hear it because I want to listen about sports. So, I mean, I've heard Felger call the president names and what have you. And, you know, I think it's ridiculous because when people want to turn on ESPN or listen to the show, it should be about sports. And, you know, just because we're in Massachusetts, too, no one likes Donald Trump in Massachusetts. And I know LeBron James doesn't like Donald Trump. And I could really care less who he likes or not. I don't want to hear it. I just want to watch him play basketball. And which, my other point is, I'd make a strong case that Larry Bird is just as good as LeBron James, if you did the comparison, and Larry Bird didn't hurt his back. And I think, though, Michael Jordan is the best of all time. But, I mean, I don't even think LeBron James, I mean, yeah, he's probably a little bit better than Larry Bird, maybe. But, I mean, there's a strong case for Bird. So, but no one wants to listen to LeBron James. He's not the GOAT. I don't like his political views.
All right, enough there. Jesus. If you don't like it enough and you want to keep talking about sports and non-sports, all sports, then let me direct you to go to Guitar Center. You buy yourself a little mixer and a nice microphone and start a podcast no one will listen to. LeBron James compared to Larry Bird. Enough. I'm going to hold the injuries against Larry Bird. I'm sorry. Like, I'm not the biggest.
This is a tough one.
I'm not the biggest LeBron James fan in the world, but I appreciate what the hell he's done and meant to the league.
Yeah.
I put him above Bird. It's Jordan and everybody else. Anyway, it's Jordan and everybody else.
Yeah, unless you want to throw, you know, Wilt in there. It gets complicated. You know, Bill Russell obviously was the greatest winner of all time. I mean, for me, it's Jordan. Like, I don't think Jordan LeBron is even, like, a thing. Like, to me, I don't even think it's a comparison. But I think in terms of physical gifts, like LeBron is in a unique category, probably one of the most physically gifted players in the history league. Like you look at Wilt, Shaq, LeBron, like there haven't been guys like that that have played in the league. The LeBron Larry Bird thing is really hard for me because I tend to, you know, it's like you're doing with your head or with your heart. Like LeBron, I think, is a better defender than Bird was. Bird was a great help defender, but I think LeBron's a better straight up defender. Obviously, he's a more physically gifted player. Bird, a much better shooter. And I think they're both fantastic passers. I give a slight edge there to Bird. It's a different era. It's really hard. I mean, you know, I'm going to go with Bird because I grew up around here. But it's just it's one of those things where it's really close in my viewpoint.
617-779-0985 is the phone number you want to join the show. It is a Sports Up Celtics show. But that's obviously Celtics related because Danny Ainge said it. He's the president of basketball ops, and I had to bring it up because it made me crazy.
No, and I understand that. And again, let me be as clear as I can be. Like, I don't think it's racist.
No, I know. I think you've been clear on that.
Yeah, I don't think it's racist. I just think it's one of those things where, and look, Danny was a legendary trash talker. So I don't know. I mean, maybe, you know, maybe he was just messing around having some fun. Like, he's really good at getting underneath people's skin. Like, if you're LeBron and you don't like the president, for whatever reason, political, you know, you don't like the president, if I compare you to someone you don't like, you're probably going to get a little annoyed. So maybe it was more of a dig, but it's definitely not racist.
So that I'm with you on it, because he says it kind of with a laugh, and he is one of the legendary trash talkers in NBA history.
Oh, yeah, Danny, absolutely. Chris, he knows how to get underneath your skin.
Chris, more than anything else, I just think it proved that he's no fan of LeBron James. Like, a lot of people aren't, because he's a carnival barker, just like the president. That's what he meant. Oh, my God.
Well, I don't want to hear your political opinion because it doesn't align with mine. And everyone in Massachusetts,
oh, yeah, shame on us. We live in an enlightened area. And if you don't like it, move to Arkansas with the rest of the rubes. One more segment to go. What's next for the Celtics? We'll get to that right after these here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Take us with you on your phone with the TuneIn app.
That's too easy right there.
It's the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Nets weathered the storm back and forth throughout. Another revenge victory for Brooklyn. 109-100 the final. As the Nets pick up their 19th win of the season and their 9th road victory.
Sports Hub Celtic Show, 98.5 of Sports Hub. Jim Murray, Chris Casper, and you. If you want to join us, 617-779-0985. What's next for the Celtics?
Brooklyn.
The Nets, who beat Memphis last night, 109-100 on the road. They've now won 9 road games, their second consecutive. And the Nets, kind of hot. They've won 11 of the last 14 games. D'Angelo Russell been playing pretty well. And so that's where the Celtics will next welcome in this 4-game homestand Monday night to TD Garden, the Brooklyn Nets. Just want to get your quick thoughts on some other league-related stuff, Chris.
Sure.
First, the level that James Harden has been playing at as of late.
Man.
He has been ridiculous. I still am not the biggest believer in him, but I mean, okay. you know, to see how he's played, like, you know, the talent is obviously undeniable. But Houston, much like how the Celtics were, they've kind of got themselves out of the tailspin that they looked like they were in for the first month and a half of the season.
Yeah, they have, and Harden's just been incredible. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I know sometimes it's not always the most fun to watch. He is King ISO, but when he has it going like he did against Golden State, and it's, you know, pretty much James Harden versus everybody, it's pretty amazing. And it's just incredible to think that at one point OKC had Durant, Harden, and Westbrook on the same team. I can't wait for that 30 for 30.
And we have Jimmy Butler reportedly testing Brett Brown, the head coach of the 76ers.
Here's a shocker.
About their offensive system. Yeah, boy, Jimmy Butler, he's got things to say no matter where he is. 76ers have been a bit of an underachiever as well so far this season. Just it feels like this thing's already kind of a tumultuous mix there.
So I read that ESPN story about, you know, Jimmy Butler challenging Brett Brown, and basically they have a free-flowing motion offense in Philadelphia, and Jimmy Butler thinks that they need to run more plays for Jimmy Butler.
Of course.
Shocker. But the interesting part of that story was, as part of that story, apparently Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons don't get along, and Simmons recently, in pursuit of a triple-double, jumped into a rebound Embiid had and elbowed Embiid in the face, and I guess Embiid, you know, like, glared at Simmons. So there's a lot of turmoil, I think, in Philadelphia, and it'll be interesting to see if it works out. Obviously, Jimmy Butler can be a free agent. Is he going to want to stay there? Brett Brown sort of has the run of the place a little bit. Elton Brand is the GM there, but Brett Brown is sort of running things, and he got what he wanted in terms of control in Jimmy Butler, but can he make it all work? And I said this a lot in Felger and Maz. I think Jimmy Butler is a difficult teammate. I think he's a difficult guy to be teammates with, and he wears out his welcome. He's had issues with teammates in Chicago. He's had issues with teammates in Minnesota. Now he's having issues with the coach in Philadelphia. What's the common denominator there? Jimmy Butler.
And lastly, as we wrap up the Sports Hub Celtic show for the week, it's been about a month since I think we've talked about this, but I would appreciate a, you know, Jim, you were right. When it comes to the Sacramento Kings, I understand they've lost three straight games, but Buddy Hield, De'Aaron Fox have been red hot throughout this season. They're a competitive team. They're 19-19 on the year. I said that this team, you know, they look competitive early, and I was like, you know what, that pick is not going to end up as good as a lot of people thought going into this season, because the Sacramento Kings are a competitive basketball team. Chris, would you like to say, Jim, yeah, you were right.
Yes, I would.
All right!
And I've said it before. You know what, Jim, you were right about the Kings. I thought that they would have faded by now. They have not faded at this point, 38 games into the year. I still don't think they're going to make the playoffs.
No, me either, but
this pick's
they're
not
just
be as
good
high.
Enough to screw yeah. up that pick.
Yeah, they are. I mean, it's really interesting, too. You could get the Memphis pick, too. I mean, that pick is top eight protected. So anything, if it's ninth you know, or more, then you get the pick. So you could end up really with four first-round picks this year in a draft that I don't think is really worthy of four first-round picks. I mean, if you're not getting, you know, Zion Williamson or R.J. Barrett or Cam Reddish or Romeo Langford. Or
don't forget about Bol Bol.
Well, he's out for a year now. If you're not getting, you know, one of those guys, what are you really getting? I don't think this is an ideal draft for the Celtics to have four first-round picks. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens. You have to hope that maybe Memphis makes a trade or there's an issue. They already, you know, had to move on from some guys over there. They've had a little bit of turmoil, guys arguing and stuff. You have to hope something happens where you can space out your picks a little bit more.
All right, no commercials here. Sean Silver's going to get you caught up in the Sports Hub headlines, the latest in the world of sports. And we'll turn our attention back to the NFL. It's Wild Card Weekend, one of my favorite weekends on the sports calendar. We'll do that next. You're on Gasper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.